You're tuned in to the Kojo Namdi show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, a new book examines the resilience of families coping with Alzheimer's. But first, think of a prototypical veteran in your head. Are you picturing a man, maybe getting along in age, wearing an American flag on his cap? These kinds of cultural stereotypes make it harder for women to raise their hands and identify as veterans. And the challenges they face are different than their male counterparts. In September, Navy veteran and House of Representatives staffer Andrea Goldstein said she was assaulted at the VA Medical Center here in Washington, D.C. A study released in February showed that one in four women experience inappropriate behavior from staff and other patients at VA medical facilities, a place where they should feel the most support. The House Committee for Veterans Affairs is calling for a culture change that will help remove this barrier to care. Joining me in studio is Representative Mark Takano. He is a congressman from California's 41st District, also chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Congressman Takano, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Also with us in studio is Andrea Goldstein, senior policy advisor on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Colonel Don Christensen is a retired Air Force colonel and the president of Protect Our Defenders. Colonel Christensen, thank you.
Thank you.
Andrea, you're a Navy veteran. You've studied and published work on gender relations and politics in the military. So why is it harder for women to be recognized or identified as veterans than it is for men?
Well, women have served in the U.S. military since the American Revolution. There are two women, Deborah Sampson and Margaret Corbin, who served in the Revolution and were granted pensions by Congress for their service. Yet, the long history of women's military service has been long forgotten and erased, and that is part of why the cultural conception of what a veteran is has forgotten women from that narrative.
As a result of which, women, when they walk into a VA medical facility, are not necessarily instantly recognized as veterans. There's often, I guess, the assumption that they're something else.
Correct. So oftentimes the assumption is that you're someone's caregiver, someone's spouse, someone's daughter, not the veteran yourself.
I have read where women who went into VA medical facilities have been asked to produce their husband's Social Security number because the assumption is that they're representing a male. Could this make women less likely to seek care at the VA than their male counterparts?
It can certainly be off-putting, especially because that's a continuation of some of the frustrations that women experience on active duty. The very first time I walked into a VA facility, that was a question that I was asked, is if I had my if I was there for myself or if I was there for my partner. Fortunately, that was 3 years ago. And fortunately, after that, I received nothing but good care at that facility and the facilities I went to after that.
Congressman Takano, the number of women veterans is on the rise and has been for a while. How is the VA adjusting to the change in demographics?
Well, that's precisely what I wanted to accomplish with my chairmanship, is to position the VA to respond to its ever-increasing diversity. We know that across all the services, currently 17% of our service workforce or our current service member population is about women, 17%. If you take out the Marines and you look at just who comprises the Air Force, who comprises the Army, who comprises the Navy, it's more like 20%. If you look at who's attending our service academies, that number reaches 30%. So we are going to see increasing numbers of our veteran population be women, and we're not just talking diversity in terms of gender. We're talking diversity in terms of the racial composition of our military. LGBT, it's been about 10 years that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was overturned. So it's been one of my important policy objectives to position the VA to be able to serve our diverse veteran population. In this case, we're especially looking at why women veterans are accessing their benefits at a lesser rate, significantly lesser rate than their male counterparts.
The VA supported a study that was released in February that says one in four women experiences inappropriate behavior at a VA medical center. What kinds of behavior are women dealing with?
Well, in many cases, we've had to, the VA, to their credit, has established separate entrances for women. As Andrea spoke earlier, women veterans often aren't immediately recognized as veterans. They're recognized as somebody else. They could be, you know, as the spouse, the daughter, or a caregiver. But rarely are they assumed to be actually the veterans themselves. And that's just the mindset at the VA. And so they could walk in the main entrance of a VA and be subject to catcalls, subject to various forms of harassment. And in the case of, Andrea, subject to sexual assault. And this has simply got to end. We have to change the mindset. We have to change the culture. And the VA needs to change as a part of an overall effort to address the increasing numbers of women and the increasing numbers of minorities and people who are open about their sexual orientation.
Andrea Goldstein, can you describe the physical space in the DC facility and how it might be triggering, particularly for victims of military sexual trauma, to walk through the halls where men are gathered?
Absolutely. So first I want to talk about just some of the history, because you talked about the study that came out in February.
Please do, yes.
So that study came out. That study provided empirical evidence on what women veterans have been saying for a long time regarding disrespect towards them, often by other veterans at VA facilities. And that was something that was an issue nationwide. When I moved here earlier this year, I had heard that the DC VA was one of the sites where that happens more frequently in the country. I've been using that facility since March. This is the first time something like that happened, but I had been stared at every time I walked in. There are benches out front where veterans will stare at you as you walk in. The pharmacy in particular is a gathering place. There's just a very large atrium where a lot of veterans and staff and caregivers are gathered. If you go through the rest of the facility away from the women's clinic, there are a lot of choke points where it sometimes feels like you're running the gauntlet. Being stared at, I've spoken to well before this incident happened, a lot of women veterans who've been voicing their concerns about issues in this facility for years, about being catcalled, heckled, wolf whistled. What happened to me was several months of this committee working on the issue, and after years of women veterans voicing their concerns.
Colonel Don Christensen, you have been dealing with these kinds of issues when you were in the active military, as a matter of fact, because you are a lawyer. Tell us a little more about what Andrea is talking about, because she mentioned things like catcalls. You can't be prosecuted for catcalling, but it is a form of sexual harassment.
Right. So sexual harassment's a huge problem with the active force, and it's spilled over into the veteran community. We know from surveys of the active force that about 25% of active duty women are sexually harassed every year while they serve. And unfortunately, in the military, that's rarely ever handled. So what we have is all these people who viewed sexual harassment as being appropriate and okay while they're on service now are veterans. And so when they see women like Andrea come into a veterans clinic, they just continue that culture of treating women as objects versus as brothers and sisters in arms.
Men in groups. It's my understanding that the care at the VA medical facility here is pretty good.
That's absolutely right. The care is absolutely fantastic. And I want to highlight in particular, so I have both VA care and I have private insurance through work. In July, I had a health issue and I called both VA and I called private care. VA saw me the same day before the private provider even returned my call.
Andrew, it's important for our listeners to know that on September 20th, as Congressman Takano referred to earlier, you reported a sexual assault that occurred at the DC VA Medical Center. You said that while waiting for a smoothie in the cafe, another patient slammed his body into yours below the waist and pressed his entire body into yours while making harassing comments. You complained to staff members, but the police were not called until Andrea reached her doctor. The VA declined our invitation to the program, but sent the following statement, quoting here, "These are serious allegations, and VA is treating them as such. The department has turned the matter over to VA's independent inspector general and other law enforcement, and a criminal investigation is underway. VA will not tolerate this alleged behavior, and we are committed to delivering justice. That's why, in order to protect the integrity of the investigation, we cannot comment further. VA recognizes that all veterans should feel safe and at home in VA facilities, and that at times, women veterans have experienced harassment by others. We are proud of our care for women veterans and are working to increase the trust and knowledge of VA services of women veterans so they choose VA benefits and services. The VA also told us that they have launched an education campaign at all facilities to end sexual harassment and train staff to intervene. Andrea, are you satisfied with that response and the steps the VA says it has taken to address it?
No, I'm not. And like we mentioned earlier, this has been a priority of the committee from the very beginning. Back in May, we held a hearing where we asked VA questions about the widespread nature of sexual and gender harassment at VA, where we learned that training is not mandatory for all employees regarding this issue. As a result, the chairman led a bipartisan letter to VA asking them to do better. And the response was disappointing. As a result, the chairwoman of the Women Veterans Task Force, Congresswoman Julia Brownlee, insisted that we introduce legislation to further address this issue because posters are not policy. And the day of the incident, I had come from a 9 o'clock meeting with her where we had put the final touches on a bill to address this issue.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation on women experiencing sexual harassment at VA medical facilities. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're talking about women experiencing sexual harassment at the VA with Representative Mark Tocano. He's a congressman from California's 41st District. He's chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Andrea Goldstein is a senior policy advisor on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. And Colonel Don Christensen is a retired Air Force colonel and president of Protect Our Defenders. Here is Jen in Silver Spring, Maryland. Jen, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. I served in the United States Navy, and I get seen at the Washington, D.C. VA. More often than not, I'm mistaken for staff, which ultimately isn't a problem. Often when we're called for appointments, we're called by the Mr. instead of Ms. or Mrs. And again, that's not that big of a problem. We have had some incidences where even in the women's clinic, men that are there to be seen for whatever reason in the women's clinic are often hostile to women. And I've never been sexually assaulted at the VA, but I've definitely been discriminated against.
Have you experienced sexual harassment at all?
I've seen sexual harassment. I've never experienced it myself.
Okay. Non-Christensen, sexual assault is a criminal offense, but sexual harassment in the workplace can be a form of employment discrimination. Legally, how difficult is it to deal with sexual harassment in a federal facility?
Well, it's really tough, especially when the sexual harassment's coming from patients rather than employees. Employees you could fire, reprimand, punish, but for somebody to come in and sexually harass, I'm unaware of any federal law that would make that a crime for a veteran to harass another veteran. And, you know, it just speaks to how we have to have a cultural fix. And I think one of the things Andrea's case shows is that the VA employees had to respond when they see it and hold the people that are doing it accountable by forcing them out of the clinic.
I was about to ask, what are the most effective ways to counteract a culture that allows this kind of behavior to persist?
Well, I think it's got to start with the active force. I mean, we have to understand that everybody who's a veteran came from the active force. And if the active force allows sexual harassment, it's just going to spill over into the veteran community. And if we ever want to change the way the veterans treat their fellow veterans, we have to make sure that when they are actively serving, they understand that not only is this a culture issue, but it's a matter of national security that we have both men and women trusting each other when they're serving.
Congressman Takano, is there currently a standard in place for how each VA medical facility in the country handles sexual harassment?
I don't know there's a national standard, no. And precisely, Ms. Brownlee's bill, Julia Brownlee's bill, would address this issue, along with making sure that there is an annual reporting on the training levels. As Andrea said earlier, in response to our May hearing and our Do Better letter that Chairman Rowe and I both signed, asking the VA to do better, the VA could not say that every one of their employees had been trained. They're not actually giving us any numbers, which makes me think that the number of employees that have been trained is far from acceptable. Training is a difficult thing. I was a trustee at a community college district, a public community college district in California, and I can tell you one of my biggest headaches as a trustee was the liability accruing from sexual harassment that was occurring with our professors and some of our students, and getting our professors and our staff trained was a major challenge. It's an employment contract. It has to be negotiated in those contracts. So, you know, I understand the challenge from a management point of view. However, this is something we must deal with. The fact that, we're seeing our veteran, one out of every five of enlisted members of our armed forces are women now. 30% of our future executive level officers in the military are going to be women. We have to change the mindset. Changing mindset is not easy. It is a cultural shift that has to happen. And the institutional strategies, they're going to have to be creative, but they're going to have to be intensive and nonstop. I was therefore disappointed that the Secretary, Secretary Wilkie, and Acting Undersecretary Stone, Dr. Stone, did not reach out, neither of them have called me about this incident, which I consider very serious, the incident with Andrea Goldstein being sexually assaulted at the Washington, D.C. VA, nor did they reach out to her. And they simply cannot hide behind the idea that they would compromise an investigation by the OIG or a criminal investigation. We notified them several days in advance of my press conference at the Washington, D.C. VA, and the response has been silence. It's been a clear distancing of the top-level management. This is clearly not the kind of leadership that's necessary to change a mindset of, the hundreds of VA medical centers across the country. So when you ask me if there's a standard, no. And there's certainly not a sense of urgency coming from the top levels of management at the VA. Let me also say that when I arrived at the VA, they did not want me to go through the front entrance. They wanted me to go through the side entrance. They did not want me to see the kind of general climate that exists and could exist.
So they were acting as if they had something to hide.
They were, yes. I would say that. And they were also trying to... they made it very difficult for us to even have the news conference. I would have expected them to actually be there by my side to say, we take this seriously. We are ashamed that this happened. And we are going to do everything possible to change the mindset here at the VA.
Here's Denise in La Plata. Denise, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Thank you for taking my call. I absolutely agree with Andrea and the harassment and the craziness that goes on at the DC VA. And There was another caller, one of your guests said earlier that the problem needs to start with the active duty forces and to get that handle at that end. But I don't know. I spent 24 and a half years in the Air Force active duty. I'm retired now, but the majority of my harassment, sexual harassment, catcalls, everything from folks following me from outside by the bus stop, where a lot of the veterans sit out there and smoke, to people hanging outside the women's bathroom right there in the atrium.
You seem to be suggesting that you've experienced more harassment since you left the military Yes. than in the 24 years that you were there.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And I don't believe that the VA is doing enough to address this issue. A small incident I'll mention with you is there are a lot of groups focused on trauma, but the majority of those groups are mixed gender groups. And when we haven't addressed, myself and other female veterans have addressed the need for women-only groups, the responses that I've gotten has always been there are not a lot of women taking advantage of the groups. And the reason why a lot of women don't take advantage of the groups is because it's so difficult. It is really traumatic to actually come down to the VA and get an appointment because you are harassed.
You have to go through that again. Thank you very much for sharing that story with us, Denise. Don Christensen, data shows a 38% increase in reports of unwanted sexual contact across all branches of the active duty military compared with 2016. And I guess that does not necessarily reflect our last caller's experience. But how do you think the culture of active duty surrounding issues of gender carries over into veteran life?
Well, I definitely think it carries over. I mean, we got two issues. Number one, a lot of our veterans that are going to the VA served in the military that may have been 2 or 3% women, and so their experience with fellow women veterans is pretty limited. But the other part of it is that since women have become an increasingly large percentage of the military, they also have been increasingly a large target for sexual assault. For women, the sexual assault rates are virtually unchanged since 2006. That's despite Congress's having put millions of dollars into fighting this and decades of promises from the leadership to stop it. And so I think one of the problems we have is we're not driving down the sexual assault rate. And the other is that leadership has not shown to the active duty force, which carries over to the veteran community, that women are valued members of bringing fight to the enemy. As Congressman Takan has talked about, women are increasingly taking over leadership positions. They are 20% of the force, but the senior leadership has not given the same message about inclusion and the value of women that the women who are serving are bringing to the force.
On to Laurel, who is apparently in the parking lot of the VA medical facility in D.C. Laurel, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, sir. I was actually driving to my appointment when I heard your show start, and I was really surprised because I had already been thinking, oh, gosh, you know, here I go. I wish that the, you know, I wish that the other male veterans could understand how uncomfortable I feel going for my appointments. It's no different than the other ladies have already talked about. But it's kind of a drag coming here and knowing that we have to face that. The care that I receive at the VA hospital, and I've been through three different VA hospitals, one in Phoenix, one in Puerto Rico, and now the one here in D.C., and I've always gotten really good care. The only problem that I've ever had is been at the Puerto Rico hospital and the one here in D.C. with the staring and
walking that gauntlet, yes.
Yeah, staring and catcalling.
Glad you brought up your experiences, because even though we're almost running out of time, I do have to read a statement that we got from Congresswoman Julia Brownlee, who chairs the Women Veterans Task Force in the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. She said, "Since I launched the Women's Veterans Task Force this year, I've continuously heard from veterans about the prevalence of sexual harassment and sexual assault of veterans, employees, and caregivers at VA facilities, either by fellow veterans or members of the public. My colleagues and I repeatedly discussed this issue during hearings and roundtables held over the last 6 months. During that time, we learned that VA does not require mandatory system-wide training of employees in how to respond to these cases of sexual harassment and assault. I have urged the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to do more to address this problem, but I have not been satisfied with the response." That echoes what you have been saying, Congressman Takano. Finally, what kind of action would you like to see the Department of Veterans Affairs take on this issue?
Well, I'd like to see them support Julia Brownlee's legislation. I'd like to see them not distance themselves from this great challenge. I mean, they, instead of running away from what happened to our very own staffer, Andrea Goldstein, they should have been there at my side. We did give them ample notice that this had happened, but they've chosen a very different route. And mainly, I want a change in attitude, a change in just the attitude that they're bringing to this. Here we're not. I want to make a very careful distinction. The medical care at the Washington VA, from all appearances, is very good. Andrea herself says she's gotten good care there, Undersecretary Stone told me that he thought that the care was good there. So that's not in dispute, and I don't want to undermine or malign the VA in terms of the care it offers. But it's not alone in facing this challenge. But the federal government has to be a leader. It has to set an example and set a tone for the rest of the rest of our country. And so I think that's the attitude I want to see our VA leadership take.
Representative Mark Takano is a congressman from California's 41st District. He's chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Andrea Goldstein is a senior policy advisor on the aforementioned Committee on Veterans Affairs. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Colonel Don Christensen is a retired Air Force colonel and president of Protect Our Defenders. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Gojo.
Short break. When we come back, a new book examines the resilience of families coping with Alzheimer's. I'm Gojo Nnamdi.
Thanks for listening to The Gojo Nnamdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.